welcome everybody out to the DDD podcast. We got a special edition episode right now featuring the double Golden Door winners of the pest control space. We got Zach Seeger, Corbin Hansen, and Brock Grieve. Not Brock Grieves.
That's the most common mistake.
As per our spelling of your name on the Spotify.
Hey, no worries.
We fixed it though, right?
Yeah, fixed it quick. I mean, time was liggety split, dude.
Liggety split. The second you sent me that text, I'm like, uh-oh. Like, no, not my boy. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, this past year, a Golden Door for pest control has been $650,000 of revenue. And these guys doubled that within a single summer. So guys, I want you guys to, you know, go through what you individually did this past summer.
Yeah, so I sold almost 1,300 accounts and did 1.5 million.
I did about 1,080 accounts, did 1.3 mil.
Yeah, and then mine was super similar to Corbin's.
Dang. So, like, we're bringing on the heat. Zach actually broke the industry record, am I correct?
Yeah, that's right.
1.5 million. So how does that feel to have broken that record?
It's good, dude. Feels awesome.
So the first thing I want to touch on, because obviously the three of you guys getting double Golden Door played a huge like role in each other's success. Like, you wouldn't be as successful without Corbin pushing you. Corbin, you wouldn't be where you are without Brock. Talk to me about like having that proximity and creating that internal competition with the three of you.
Yeah, I think like we talk about it all the time. Proximity really is power. And so there really wouldn't be, I think, we say this over and over and over and over. There is no Zach without Brock. There's no Brock without Corbin. There's no Seeger without Drew. There's no Drew without Cody. And so when you're surrounding yourself with other salesmen, it just elevates you to a higher level when they're outselling you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that every company actually does have that. And every sales environment does have that internal competition. And whether that's right, there's maybe a couple pillar vets competing with each other that are like, you know, tracking to sell 250 accounts. And it's like, it's that competition that drives them to sell 250 accounts. It's because that's the numbers that they're competing with, right? The big days are 5 or 6, the normal days are 2 or 3. And they're just constantly like looking at that. It's like the bar is kind of set by the proximity, the environment that like you're watching hit the leaderboards, the bar is set. And so what's so different, I think, about us, and it was like just such a blessing to be a part of, is the bar wasn't 3 or 4 accounts a day. The bar was, okay, cool, Zach just sold 15K. That's what I'm chasing. All right, cool. Me and Corbin are neck and neck. And we're both just throwing down 50K a week, 55K a week. And so it's actually not different than what other teams have. It's the same concept. It's the same idea. It's just, we were blessed to be a part of like a system that, the bar was so much higher. And, I think that's why all of us could say that was like basically the key component to, us hitting double Golden Door this year. It's just not really something that we chose to do. It's just kind of what the environment of good reps were doing around us. So we were like, oh, cool. I guess that's what we got to go out and do this time.
Yeah, totally. Like, because I think a big piece of it is accountability, right? It's like if Seeger is putting up 15K in a day and you're trying to go neck and neck with him, it only makes sense because if you go out and bomb that day, the only person that you have to keep accountable to is yourself. And if you're trying to raise that standard for you and you're looking at him as that standard, I mean, it just changes the whole game. Trying to raise yourself up to that. So how do you guys not get caught up though in like the comparison mode and not get down on yourself for that? If you're looking at Seeger selling 15K in a day, how does that not let you get down, you know?
I get it. So that, for me, it's really just like finding the balance of like having like the competitive nature of yourself as well as like finding, or as well as having just like the self, I guess the self competition. Like, I think if anything, like it literally just makes things easier to have like the competition of having like Brock and Seeger the whole summer. But then the main thing, like, especially this last summer, I realized was like, dude, it's just finding like your own race, like honestly. But then just having those different, like having that different competition with like all the guys at the company where we work at, just to help you, I guess, progress and get a lot better.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on that, Brock or Siegs?
First thought that came to my mind of, cause I think this is way important. I think a lot of reps in the summer do get down on themselves because they're not pacing with their homie or they're not pacing for their goals. I think that's a super relatable thing that a lot of people go through. In fact, I think everybody probably sitting here had a point in the summer where we weren't pacing or we were behind or we were getting whooped on by somebody else. The way that you don't get down is you separate the choice to a daily choice and, you just wake up in the morning and you kind of take it day by day. If you look at it on the period of, at least for me this summer, if whenever I would like look at the whole entire summer and like what I had to do and holy crap, I got 400K to go and it's mid July, right? Or whatever it is, right? It's like, you could get really discouraged by that.
Yeah. But I think I have to do a whole summer's worth of work.
It's like, oh my gosh. But what's way easier to do is just like wake up in the morning and say, hey, we'll let tomorrow get here when it gets here, but I just got to decide what to do today. And if, and that makes it so much, that's a way easier pill to swallow of like, okay, I can go and I can work hard one more day. I don't care what happens tomorrow, but today I'm going to be great. And then you wake up the next morning and you do, you just go through that same routine and system of like choosing who you want to be that day. And that's at least how I was able to deal with. And also, I mean, there were, it's not like Zach beat Corbin and I every single day or
yeah, Corbin beat me every single day,
right? It's like, there's also like, there's days where like, cool, I'm the top of the leaderboard or another one of our Golden Door reps was at the top of the leaderboard. So you're also kind of like stacking your wins along the way and looking at those like, oh yeah, I've beat him before. I've been the top of the leaderboard hundreds of times. Like today is going to be a day that I'm going to go replicate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's powerful. And real quick too, I wanted to debunk a myth that we've been hearing a lot of. Like we just saw Zach give a great workshop at DDDCon and it was funny because he totally flipped it on its head where it was like, this is about like winning the first 30 seconds of the door, handling objections. Basically everyone's like, oh, we're going to get sales training. And Zach just stands up and immediately is like, guys, this isn't about the pitch. This is about mindset. So let's talk about that myth. Why is it not about the pitch, Zach?
Yeah, I think especially in pest control, we all have like essentially the same pitch. Like you've seen my trucks, we're doing it today, so forth. What really starts to affect a salesman is when his mentality is sharper than the other salesman in a neighborhood or on the leaderboard or on the summer, right? And so when you start to stack it over the entire summer, that's when you start to separate the good sales reps compared to the great sales reps. And the first time I was on this podcast, we talked about there's a lot of reps that are from like the 200 to 300 range, tons. The only difference between those and the Golden Door reps is just their mentality. Yeah. And so I talked a lot at the workshop about self-talk and self-belief. And the saying that always comes to my mind is like, whether you believe it or not, you're right. And so like, if you have this full on self-belief that you can go out and you can do it and you're in the right environment with the right people surrounding you, there's a very high chance that you're going to do it. But if you have this super negative, I can't do it, I suck, this neighborhood sucks, it's going to be very, 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 very hard for you to go out and do it.
Totally. So you're saying you say the same thing that every other pest control rep says?
Crazy, huh?
There's no secret pitch.
There's no secret sauce.
That's crazy. Corbin, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I say it all the time, but it's like, dude, anyone that sells between 200 and 400 has pretty much identical pitch to me. And so just like Zach said, it's literally just, I think just, for me, it's mainly just building confidence in the pitch mostly, just because people feel your confidence way more than they hear your words. And yep. So it's really just literally making that mental switch of, oh, I can actually go out and sell 10 every single day. Not just, oh, I got lucky this one day I sold 10 because my pitch was a little bit better or this or that. It's really just a full confidence thing and learning how to show up with it every single day with the same thing.
100%. So Brock, what would you say, what role does the pitch have then? Because obviously we do need to learn it.
Yeah, you got to have like the principles and fundamentals and the most effective techniques down, right? You can't go out to war with a pocket knife, right? You need to have, you need to have the right system in place as far as like a sales pitch goes. But once you've mastered that, it really just to beat a dead horse, I guess, it comes down to your belief in yourself. And that's something that, you know, we talked about on our last podcast, Roz, is the most important thing to accomplishing your goal, whatever that goal is that you can believe that it's actually done. So the real question is not, the real question is, how do you believe in yourself? Like, how do you actually build that? Like, that's the actual question. I think, if anyone were to come up to me and say, "Hey Brock, I want to be a Golden Door rep. What do I need to do to be that?" Or, "Hey Brock, I want to be $1 million rep, or a $2 million rep. I want to be a triple Golden Door," right? The one answer is, okay, if you want to do that, you 100% have to believe in full confidence, like you believe the sky is blue, that you can do it, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the question. And my answer to that question, you know, cause we had, you know, there were 60 Golden Doors in the space, this year, and 37 of those worked with us. And so, we kind of have an expert point of view of Golden Door reps and what makes them do it. And then also the difference between Golden Door reps and double Golden Door reps. And it's literally not a work ethic thing. It's not a pitch thing. It's a belief thing. And I know that all three of us, basically before we even knocked our first door this summer, you know, we believed that's what we were going to go do. And so it just kind of happened. And so the question is, how do you believe in yourself? And to me, the easiest way to believe in yourself is just, it's the proximity of what's going on around you. Mm-hmm. If you got a homie who you're tight with, who's putting up the numbers that you want to put up, it's super easy to believe that you can put up those numbers, right? It's like, so for example, I've been selling much longer than Zach. I was with Zach his rookie year, sold 400 accounts. This kid came out of the womb, just ripping, bro. And is crazy, right? So the next year, Zach and I set out to do the same goal, right? We both wanted to do 1,000 accounts. And with, you know, I'm like, dude, there's no way Zach outsells me because I've been selling longer. I'm better at this. I outsold him last year. And because Zach was putting up these numbers, right, and selling so many accounts, this was back in 2021, like it was so easy, dude, for me to believe that I could sell 1,000 accounts. And that was the system that we set up. And then, right, Corbin joins, and Corbin's older brother, who he's been competing with his whole life, not to speak for you, Corbin.
Yep.
Same thing, right? Your older brother, who you've been competing with your whole life, like you're saying, telling yourself, dude, this guy's not better than me because I know him. I've beat him at a million things. And then Drew's putting it up. So it's super easy for Corbin to believe it.
Yeah. It just makes things way easier when you've seen not only like one person do it, but you've seen multiple people do it over and over and over again. So then it just creates this self-confidence of like, oh dude, if we've had 30 people do it, there's no reason like I can't go out and do it as well. Just cause I think we're all pretty much the same. Like as far as like mentals go, I think we all think super alike. And so when you just see that happen over and over and over again, it just creates that self-belief. That's literally the only reason that we have so many guys do it at the grip. So,
yeah.
And one thing, like I hear this all the time is like at other companies, they'll say like, "Oh, I'm just not like him." Like, "Oh, I'm just not like Brock." Like Brock's crazy. He's out there.
I've even heard screwless. It's like that Zach Seeger kid is just like,
he's different.
He's an alien.
Yeah. He's just different.
He's an outlier. Right? He's an enigma.
And so like what I would encourage people to do is like, go hang out with Golden Door reps, go to lunch, go work out with them, go ice bath, whatever it is. Like we do it all the time. Like we're more than happy. All of us work out every morning. Come work out with us.
Yeah.
And see, right? Like that's really when, cause I made the jump from 400 to 1,000 my second year. The only difference was I started like working out and hanging out with all of like the guys that were better than me the year before. And I was like, oh dude, Drew sold 1,000 last year, or Cody sold 1,700 accounts last year. Like Cody's not different than me. Like I'm mm-hmm. as good as Cody, if not better than Cody, is the way I started to view it.
Yeah.
So,
and that's like the coolest thing about like, on a personal note, meeting and talking to so many Golden Door reps. Cause I'm like, oh wait, these guys are like literally no different than me. Some of them I'm even like, oh, you guys are like awkward as hell. it's shocking even. So it's so cool though. I love that principle so much of like, you believe it so much. You believe it as if like at the same level, you believe the sky is blue.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a cool life principle. Like, isn't it cool what the doors teach us? Like, especially accomplishing something big like that and doing that, it like there's nothing you can't do at that point. So like, how do you really truly cultivate that belief where you do not doubt that you can do something?
I can hit on this. I think it's just confidence, like Corbin was saying. And I talked about this at the workshop. It's you're stacking little wins over and over and over, or we call it stacking dubs.
Stacking dubs.
And so if you're right, stacking dubs is doing hard things, creating little wins throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year. And so when you start to create these little wins, you have this undeniable proof of who you say you are, if that makes sense. And so that's when you can go out and have that confidence or that swagger. But if you're just the quote I always say is the one I said in my presentation, like you can shout affirmations all you want, but if you don't have like that foundation, it's going to be pretty tough for you to like believe it, if that makes sense.
100%.
So that's what I would say.
I love that. Corbin, you got any thoughts on this?
No, same thing. Literally just, I think like we talk about like on the doors, even like when I've gone 6-7 hours of that deal, it's like, we always say like, I'm due for like a deal to fall.
Yeah.
Same thing. It's like, dude, it's literally just stacking the dubs in every way you can. Not only in like the sales aspect, but dude, like every single aspect of your life. Like, dude, it just creates you, or it just makes you do that to have a big summer, or to have a big day, or have a big week, just because you know you're doing the little things. And I fully believe that it's like, dude, what you put out is going to come back to you.
Yeah.
Which I think replicates that perfectly.
100%.
I've got some thoughts too. When it comes to, right, because the question is cultivating that confidence. I think stacking the wins, I think Goggins calls it having a book of overwhelming evidence, which I think is totally true. I think there's a second part to it as well, which is your focus. Something that I see like basically every year is someone sets out to like accomplish a really big goal and they might actually have confidence and they might actually have that book of evidence. And then what happens is they get in their head because they have a couple bad sales days. And so something that I try to like really teach, like, you know, my region a ton is what you focus on, which is your inputs and not your outputs. Mm. And, I've fallen victim all the time to maybe like getting a little bit behind. And even though I've got this big book of evidence that I can like accomplish big goals, like I'm still not putting up like good numbers. And if I was to focus on the numbers I'm putting up, and then I would naturally focus on like my losses. So even though I have like this big book of wins, if I'm looking at like my bad sales days, focusing on my outputs, then all of a sudden, like I'm actually now focusing on the negatives and I'm not even looking at my book of evidence. And so what I think I've seen so many Golden Door reps do well is focus on their inputs and controlling the things that you can control. What time are you getting on the doors? How's your mindset in between the doors, right? Are you going through a good mental checklist between the doors, right? Meaning like, are you talking positively? Are you looking for evidence, you know, of like ways that you can sell people better? Are you going through your pitch in your head? Are you remembering your bandwagon? Are you knocking late? Are you not taking breaks? Are you hungry, even if you're already at 5, 6, 7 deals? Like just all of the inputs that you can possibly think of. Are you going to the morning meetings hungry, right? Are you waking up on time? Are you going to bed at a good hour? Are you like, do you have good nutrition? And so my advice to anyone who wants to get a really good goal, right, is or hit a really good goal is to, yes, create that book of evidence by stacking all of your wins. And then secondly, be totally dedicated to the idea of how you can still feel great about yourself, even if you throw up a zero, right? Which is for me, right? My worst day this summer was 1. And I was totally stoked about the day because I started knocking way early. I grinded I know my pitch was good, or at least I think my pitch was good. Like it felt like I was selling well. Overall, you can't choose for people. And that day deals didn't drop, but those same exact inputs the next day got me like 13K. And so if you have like your inputs dialed and you're focusing on that, you can have a ton of confidence because over the course of 100 days in a summer, 120 days, if you're focusing on your inputs, you're going to have the best outputs possible rather than just focusing on the outputs. That makes sense.
Yeah. I think that is so powerful because it's like, if you focus so much on the outputs, you're going to screw yourself. because it's like, you're going to be so overwhelmed by what you couldn't control rather than what you could control. Because I think the fact that you could sell one that day and still be stoked about the day speaks a lot to that character and speaks a lot to, like, you know, that momentum that you can carry moving forward. Because if you focused on the negative and you're like, oh, like, I didn't sell anything, then that negative momentum carries over to the next day and you're toast after that.
100%.
So now, kind of speaking to leadership, because there's a lot of good sales reps out there. A lot of them have a hard time duplicating themselves. So what are your guys' leadership principles to help empower your own reps to do what you guys do?
Yeah, I can hit on this. I think I've said this on the podcast before, but like, speed of the leader, speed of the team. So really the best way you can replicate results that you've had or replicate and have your guys go out and win Golden Doors is by you being in the trenches with them. So this year on my team, we had me who won 2 Golden Doors and then Adam Clark who went from 200K to 700K. And then Bailey Stanley, who went from like 150K to 650K. The only reason they were able to do it was because I was selling at such a high level and they were just following suit, if that makes sense, was the biggest reason. Not the only reason, but also like the belief and everything we've talked about. But that's the best way in my experience that you can lead your people is just being in the trenches with them.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say. You guys?
Yeah, Rick.
Yeah, I've seen a trend, and maybe this trend can go through the entire door-to-door industry. My first year, the top rookies sold about 50% of what the manager sold. And almost every single year following, it's actually been that trend. So like year two, the top guy sold like 650 accounts. The top rookie sold like 320. That was Jackson Jr. and Chuck Mills. Mm-hmm. Year three, very similar story. Year four, I sold 1,000 accounts. Our top rookie sold like 460. This last year, right on my team, I sold 1.3 mil. My best rookie sold 650K. So like, I've seen this trend, at least in my experience over the past 6 years selling, where literally like it's the top rookie on the team sold 50% of what the manager sold. And so the easiest way to, like, just statistically to get your guys to sell more is for you to sell more. Like, statistically, I've seen that.
And we have the data, we're a marketing company. Yeah. We get to open the books of every company we market for. So not only are we seeing this from great companies that we market for, but we're seeing them.
Yeah, we like, see it from everybody.
All of them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So as far as like cultivating that, I mean, yes, first and foremost, like, you got to sell a lot, but then also you do see, like, there's 60 Golden Doors out here. Like, the question is, how many of those guys have then replicated that Golden Door success, like, onto their people? And I don't think that there is a large group that are replicating that success for their guys. This year, like in our region, we had 6 Golden Doors. And I think that one of the reasons is because of what we talk about, what we measure. Like, we want guys to like really get the most out of themselves. And we believe, back to the big B word, like, I believe that those guys can do it. Like, actually, like, I believe in them. Mm-hmm. Like, I've worked with them, I know them, and I know that getting a Golden Door is super, super achievable if you can get yourself to the point where you believe that you can do it. And so, at least from like our experience, what like I focused on was meeting with these guys, helping them believe in themselves, helping them create that stack of evidence, helping them focus on the inputs. And I think that's why my business partner is Wills Nilsson. I think that's why Wills and I were able to have 6 Golden Doors just in our region. And it's because we believed it, we had the systems to do it, we have all the things, and then also we could just then talk about it with our guys, and now they can believe it because they've seen it, they know how it can be done. And it just created the snowball effect of being able to create, not that we created it, like, those guys went out and got it, they were the dogs, but hopefully we were able to facilitate a good system that they could accomplish it.
What's up, guys? Sam Taggart here. I know I'm just jumping in right in the middle of your freaking podcast, and don't be alarmed or fast forward this because I got something important for you. First off, shout out for listening. Second off, shout out for being a student of the game. Third off, if you're ready to take your game to a whole nother level, it's about investing, not just getting the free stuff, but getting the paid stuff to where we spend meaningful time, money, and energy, giving step-by-step tackle training right there on how to sell, how to close, how to overcome objections, how to get referrals, all the nuts and bolts, industry specific on solar, pest, alarms, HVAC, real estate, all sorts of different industries. We've gone and found the experts, giving you the number one sales training platform in our space. Go to theddexperts.com and book your demo today. I promise the investment is worth it. Now, get back to listening to your show. But before you forget, I promise you it's worth the time just to get on the phone with one of our guys.
I wanted to go through a little bit. What are some of the biggest mistakes leaders make in the space?
Yeah, Corbin, you want to hit on that?
Yeah. I think what I see like all the time, especially in like the whole industry, is a lot of leaders that just like have too many guys to manage, right?
Or air quotes.
Too many guys where it's like, dude, then you look back at like last year, and it's like, dude, Drew sold 1.3 with however many guys, 200 guys, right? Seeger sold 1.5 with what, 70, 80 guys?
80 guys, yeah.
So it's like, really, it's like, it is such a myth when it comes to that, just because, dude, the more the leader sells, that's just going to pump belief, pump your guys with belief, and that's going to make everyone sell more.
Yeah.
Not, oh, I'm just going to take kind of an off year, help out with my guys. It's like, no, that doesn't help your guys. What helps your guys is you being on the doors and literally putting up as much as you can just to fill them with belief throughout the whole entire summer. So yeah. I'd say that's the main thing.
The real reason most leaders get off the doors is because they feel like they're going to make enough money off their recruits. It's not because they feel like that's what's best for the team. You know, this is maybe a hot take, but I feel like a lot of guys get to the point where like, oh yeah, let's see, I'm going to make this much off this guy, this much off this guy. Cool. I can make 100, 200 grand off my team this year. So I'm going to then fall back on this excuse of I'm going to really focus on my guys this year. And I'm not going to go out and sell air quotes. I'm going to focus on my guys. I'm going to build up my guys' goals. And look, dude, that's a tale as old as time. We've seen that. We've got data on that. Quickest way you can fail your team, especially if you're the guy who's like is the best sales rep. Now, there's a lot of guys that I've seen that we work with who stop knocking doors and they step into more of a managerial role. Mm-hmm. Here's why they've been able to do that successfully though. They've got hundreds of guys, but also the guys leading the teams were just as capable as them. So for example, Skylar Griffin, he's and Parker Anderton, they're the partners at the company that we work with. And they're like the guys I've directly worked with and sold with for the last few years. They did not step off the doors until they knew that a leader just as capable as them could then go out and lead. So like the office that I was in when I was with Skylar, he sold 1,100 accounts. He helped the top rookie get to over 450 accounts. He stopped knocking because like he had so many teams and he could travel and he could do tons of things. Mm-hmm. But each of those teams had a golden door rep to lead it.
He duplicated himself.
100%. Most leaders don't wait till that point. Most leaders don't get to that point in general. And then they leave before any of their other guys and they leave the team to get literally run or managed by some second or third year who's never led guys, who's not had like an incredibly high summer and who really needs to focus on building up himself before he can actually go help. Like it's the same thing. Like on an airplane, the airplane's crashing. They always say, put on your own face mask before mm-hmm. you put on your kids. Right. And that's not to say you're being selfish. That's to say like you can do more good if you're safe. Like you can have a bigger impact on everyone else if you're safe. It's the same thing in leadership. Like you got to build yourself up, become a great leader so that then you can go replicate it to others. And at that point you can get off the doors. Anyways, might've been a little bit of a tangent.
Oh no, I think that was good. I think you are morally irresponsible if you are a leader and you have not properly duplicated yourself and you've stepped down from your organization. Like, I think that is a
powerful principle. That was bars, Ross. You just dropped the mic on everybody, bro.
We got our sound bite for the podcast. All right,
just stop the tape.
But it's crazy because like sometimes it's like, you know, the lack of ownership, the lack of accountability. Like I saw that in my own organization when I was on the doors. My leader that I looked up to left our organization and left everyone to suffer for it. And it was horrible. And so like that hits a personal note for me. So
I would say this too, like whatever the top, like let's say the leaders are all about ripping, like, oh dude, I have a 18% margin on this guy. I have a 12% margin on this guy. Cool. I don't have to knock. Like the team will totally feel that and they're not going to perform as well. Right. And so when the leaders are all aligned and it's all about impact,
yeah,
that's going to influence the team a lot more, in my opinion, echoing what Brock has said. So
absolutely. Powerful stuff. So I wanted to speak about a kind of a hot topic that's in, within the industry. A lot of stones get thrown about the word retention. What are your guys' thoughts on retention?
I think Brock can answer this pretty well.
Sure. Yeah, I think retention is super, super, super important. There's an earnings pie, right? Where you, now most companies in the industries zone in on one slice of that pie, whatever they're best at, right? So here are like some of the aspects of the pie. Sold accounts, average contract value, retention, commission percentage, sold to service ratio, right? That's, there's probably a few more, but we'll just go with those five slices of pie, right? And a lot of companies will maybe zone in because maybe they're smaller, or say that they have really high retention, right? Say that their guys have 10 or less percentage in retention. Like, that's awesome. We are all huge proponents of selling clean accounts. And the best way that you can have high retention is selling clean, honest accounts. Customers know what they're getting. They know the price. They know what they're signing up for. Huge proponent of that. I think that that's super, super, super important. In fact, at a I won once this, it's called the, what was it called?
Quality King.
Oh, Quality King Award once, which was basically like, I was known as selling like, you know, the cleanest accounts or whatever. Okay. We all believe in that a ton. Things that affect your attrition outside of you would be like size of the company, how much you're charging, how many visits to the home the pest control company is doing, right? And here's why. If the company's large, there's just a little bit, it's a little bit harder to like monitor things. If you're going to the home instead of four times a year, six times a year, there's two more times that, you know, the technician could mess up. If you're charging a lot, it's easier to get undercut. It's easier to get shopped around. Now, what's most important though, like we are all hired to make the most money for the companies, right? That's why a company contacts us to go sell for them. And that's how it is in the whole door-to-door industry, right? It's like, why are they paying you? To build the company, to put on clean revenue, to make them money, to make the owner money, right?
Exactly.
And then the reason I do it is because I would also like to make a lot of money doing it. So just doing like simple math, right? Say that like there's a system in place where you can sell a really high contract value, right? A $1,200 contract value. And you sell 100 accounts, that's $120,000 in revenue. And then there's a different system that you can sell $800 contracts. And you sell 100 accounts, that's $80,000 in revenue. Well, the guy who sold $120,000 in revenue can have 40% attrition. And the guy who sold $80,000 can have 100%, or excuse me, the guy who sold $120,000 can have 40% cancellation, 60% retention, right? He can retain 60%, and the guy at $80,000 can retain 100%, and it's about the same level. So really, like, even though the guy who sold 40%, who had a 40% cancellation rate, he made the owner, himself, the teams, just as much money as the guy who had 100% retention. And so, and you know, 40% retention is pretty bad. If you had that, you probably sold dirty accounts, right?
Yeah.
And so it's all about the balance of the earnings pie and making the ownership of the company the most money possible, which is really by selling clean accounts and doing everything on your end too, but then also selling the highest contract value that you possibly can and selling the most accounts that you possibly can in a clean way. And that's how you're going to make the owner the most money, yourself the most money, your reps the most money. And that's how you can do your job that you're hired to do, if that makes sense.
I think it makes total sense. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, the more you sell, the more cancels are going to be. Like, it's just how it is.
Sure.
So it's like, yeah, if you sold 1.5 million and you had zero cancel, like, you didn't sell 1.5 million.
Yeah, 100%.
But any other thoughts on retention or how to keep better retention, or what do you guys think?
No, I would just say, just echoing what Brock said, your job, right, is to make the company or the owner of the company as much money as possible. That's why you're hired, right? At the same time, you're out there to make the most money possible. Mm-hmm. It's not very fair for a company to limit the ACV you can sell, because then you're limiting how much you can earn, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So it's like, when you're out there recruiting or trying to pick what company you should sell for, you should look, where can I make the most money possible? Don't look at what company is going to have the best retention, because that's only one piece of the pie, just like Brock said.
Yeah, absolutely. Corbin, you got any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think I mean, the goal is to have like great great retention, right? But it's like, that's not the main goal. The main goal is to make as much as you can and to net as much as you can off each deal, right? Yeah. It's like, I would way rather have like the same example Brock said. It's like, I'd way rather have a $1,200 contract and have, say, 40% attrition than have an $800 contract and have 0%.
Yeah.
Because my percent's going to be higher. I'm going to make way more money off having 40% attrition on selling the same amount of accounts. Yeah. And that's the main goal. It's not, let's have the highest percent possible. Like, it's like, yeah, we're going to strive to have the best retention we possibly can with what's in our hands. But the goal is to make as much money possible for us, the company, and everyone around us.
Yeah. So. And then just to dispel a quick myth here for those listening, if you're like, oh, they only care about money. No, guys, this adds value to the customer too. This is really like, this is a customer centered model. Is, you know, because a lot of guys are like, oh, that's like, you're charging way too much. But that's the thing. It's like nowadays, yeah, you charge $1,200 ACV, but you're also providing $1,200 worth of value of that contract.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
And with that, like, even especially this last year, I feel like 2 years ago, I mean, it was still kind of the same as far as service goes. This last year, though, dude, like selling at Aptiv, and then I sold at GreenX for a month and a half. Dude, the value was so there. Like, you call Terminix or Orkin out, they're going to quote you $350 for the first one, and then $80 to $100 a month after that. And so it's like, and right there, that's already over. I'm not very good at math, but
that's
already,
that's an expensive
$1,200 on the year.
Yeah,
where it's like, dude, at GreenX, I could go sell my ACV is like $1,250 at GreenX, and they would do all rodents, all mosquitoes, all general pest, literally a termite inspection once a year, everything. And so especially when you have different packages like that you can sell, I think it helps a lot as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of want to shift gears now into like selling accounts ethically, because if you're selling double golden door, you're going to get guys that are like, oh, well, they're doing dirty. Like, they're being sneaky. Like, what are your guys' best tips and tricks on selling ethically?
Yeah. Something that is in our training that we harp on a ton is going over the terms specifically, like with the customer, how long the contract is, what the cancellation fee is, how much they're going to pay per treatment, how much they're paying for the first one, and having it extremely clear, right? The second would be not being a yes man. So the example I always use, oh, is this going to take care of my dandelions? Like, a lot of like guys get into a habit of saying, oh yeah, it will. Like, or they'll say something like, well, it's not going to make them worse. And like, they're trained to like sell on that, like, or to like kind of bend the truth, or say that there's some pests that aren't taken care of, like, I don't know, freaking squirrels in the attic or something, right? And a customer says, oh, we need this. We have squirrels in the attic. So many reps would be like, oh, it's not going to hurt, or, oh, it will. Yeah. If they find the bait box, like, it'll kill them. In a way of like almost saying like, yes, it'll take care of it without saying it. Like, no, uh-huh. Like we're huge on, no, we don't treat for squirrels. No, nope. You're going to have to go get that yourself. And there's good sales technique to use that, which is saying like, you know, like making a joke out of it, or being like, oh man, no, we love the squirrels too much. We're not going to take it. Like, what that I'm just spitballing here. But anyways, it's like, you gotta sell clean. You gotta make sure the customers know. You gotta set proper expectations, right? I'll hear this all the time. If you ever see a single bug on the property again, you call us. It's like, no, dude, they're still going to have flies. They're still going to have bugs. Like, so we're huge believers in selling clean. And I think that's, the industry has done this weird thing of like associating, and I get why, because there are a lot of sketchy sales reps who sell poor accounts, and that's why their retention is terrible and they have 40% cancel. But what's most important is selling clean, making sure the customers know what they're signing up for. And if you're doing that, you're doing everything that you can to prevent cancels. And that's why I know all of us have had like really, really, really good retention. Like, you know, I've sold 1,000 accounts and had 7% cancel before, right? Literally retained 93%. Mm-hmm. It's because the customers know what they're getting when I ask them to sign up.
Yeah. And it's crazy, because it's, you know, they just want to know. It's like, if they are like, oh, how much is the cancellation fee? It's not that they're not going to buy. They just genuinely want to know. Like, you can tell them, if you tell them straight up and you tell them with confidence, they're fine with it. Where the gray area comes from is when you get wishy-washy about it.
Yeah.
You're like, well, it's like.
The customer just wants to know the truth. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what I've, especially this last year, learned. It's like, dude, people respect it way more when you're just flat out honest and tell them exactly how much it's going to be. Then you trying to bend the truth and maybe deflate the numbers and this and that. Dude, they literally just want to know. They really don't care if they're spending $800 or $1,500 in the year. They really don't care like at all, as long as they know how much it is and how well it's going to, how well like the service will be.
Any thoughts, Siegs?
No, I just think it goes back to your values. Like, what do you actually care about?
Yeah.
I care that I'm like, I have integrity. I'm not a liar. Like those are two things I really care about. And so like, if I ever was to lie to a customer, it's like, that would totally hurt my feelings and I would not be okay with that.
Yeah. 100%. Cause, and then that like takes away from your own confidence because your view of yourself is now getting distorted.
1,000%.
It's kind of scary, but I want to touch a little bit on it because a lot of people, they will say part of the truth, but not the full truth. So it's like, oh yeah. What's the cancellation fee here? Oh, just call the company. They'll take care of it for you.
Yeah.
When in like reality, it's like, yeah, technically what you said was not lie.
Just bending the truth.
But you're just bending the truth. And it's unfortunate to see a lot of that in the industry sometimes, but it's crazy. Cause I genuinely believe one, we're in the era of the worst salespeople ever. And two, people respect straight up honesty more than anything else.
Yep.
And if you can hone that in, I think it's a game changer. So I want to kind of go into recruiting now. What are your guys' best philosophies on recruiting?
I would say like, don't recruit kids off BS. Like, don't inflate numbers. Recruit off like what actually matters. Like, recruit off results. The saying that comes to mind, we say this in all of our recruiting meetings, like, leaders create culture, culture drives behavior, and behavior drives results.
Ooh, Urban Meyer.
Urban Meyer's, right? And so like, if you want to work for a company and they don't have the results you want to have, like, it makes it pretty tough for you to justify like, oh, like, I can become like a Golden Door rep, but like, this company's never had Golden Door reps. Like, how am I going to be able to do that? Right. And so like, my biggest thing is like, if you are a recruiter in the space, recruit off, like, be ethical, like, don't lie, don't inflate the numbers.
Same thing.
Yes. Like, the other day I heard this Aptiv guy say that the average rookie makes $104,000 at Aptiv. Like, that's just like not true.
That would be sick.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. Right.
That's not a knock on Aptiv. That's a knock on the recruiter.
On the recruiter. Yeah, correct. But it's like, it's frustrating sometimes when, I think the space has been kind of like we've talked about, right? Just corrupt in recruiting off things that really just don't matter. Like, I call it like the summer sales BS of like, dude, you're going to this market. It's awesome. It's never been knocked. You get out there and then there's 15 knocking companies. Or, dude, you're going to have this MD, you're going to have this percentage. It's awesome. And then you get out there and one of your teammates has a higher like MD or percentage. And so I would just say like, recruit off like the concrete things, the results, the environment, the culture, recruit off the leadership you're around, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You got awesome.
You want me to go?
You got it.
This is something I'm way passionate about. I think this is an awesome question, Roz. So to piggyback a little bit on what Zach was saying, like, the most important questions you need to ask your leader in a recruiting meeting: who is leading the office and what's his track record? Okay. How many did he sell last year? How many did his top guy sell? Has he ever run an office before? And if the answers to that are either weird, like they don't give you real answers, okay, you've got a better option somewhere else. Okay, go somewhere else. If they can't just answer the question straight up, or if they have to doctor up, or, you know, make it look pretty, if they have to like give you a sales pitch on those answers, excuse me, still going through puberty, I guess. If they have to give you a sales pitch on those answers, okay, you got a better option. Go to someone who can answer you straight up. And then if the answers are, oh, the leader has only sold 200 or 250, it's like, okay, let's go back to the track record. That means that leader's best rookie is going to sell 125, which isn't enough, especially because that leader was probably promising the rookie he'll make 50K, which if you sell 125, making 50K would be crazy unless you're getting paid.
A bit 50. Of a stretch.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a stretch, right? Anyways, or if they're like, oh, this is the leader's first year running an office, which is not bad. Everybody had to have their first year running an office at one point or another. But then it's like, okay, cool. Well, what about last year? What role did the leader play? Like, how much did he sell? And then if you can start to get good answers on his track record, then you can be confident that, like, you know, he can go out and run an office. So I think what Zach said was super pertinent. Who's the leader? What's the culture of the company? What did the best guys do? Not all the fruity stuff that everyone talks about, like the commission percentage. Because, dude, you can get some fat commission percentage as a rookie. You can get paid 50% as a rookie. Mm. But then if you go out and you don't sell, and you sell 50K in revenue, like, that's just your earnings are not going to be as high as 30% somewhere else, but you sell 175K, right? You're going to make more money there. So the most important thing that people can look for is, what system in place can I go to that will help me sell the most? That's the actual question people need to look for. Where can I go that I'll sell the most? Which is, what leader do I need to strap up to? What culture has the best training? Mm-hmm. And the way that you actually know that is just by looking at the numbers, right? Culture and results are inseparable. Training and results are inseparable. I hear all the time, "Oh, dude, our training is just as good as yours." I'm like, "What are you talking about, bro? Like, your best guy sold like 200 accounts. Like, your training is not as good as ours. Like, mm-hmm. it's just not. You don't have the numbers to back up that claim." That'd be as crazy as like BYU saying, "Oh no, we're going to win the Natty next year." like they might, right? Like, maybe some weird world that happens. But if, you know, Georgia comes up to me, or if Saban just retired, but if he comes up and he's like, "Hey, we're going to win the Natty next year," I'm like, "Yeah, you're probably right," because he's got that track record like for it. So, that's,
yeah. I would say something for those who haven't, I would highly encourage you guys to go listen to Sam Taggart's podcast with Casey Baugh. Have you listened to that one?
Oh, it's so good.
It's awesome, right? And so and Casey and Sam start talking about like recruiting, and they start talking about like the things that matter, like Brock's talking about the culture, the environment, the team, the results. And that's where, like, actually you guys should be looking at that stuff rather than the percentages or the whatever it is, the market, because those things don't matter. Or, "Oh dude, if I sign with this company, they'll take me on a sick cruise to Brazil." Like, that doesn't matter. That's not going to help you sell better. What's going to help you sell better, right, is like all the things we've been talking about. So that's what I would say.
100%. And it's like, it's really sad to me that there are recruiters out there that, you know, overpromise their reps, underdeliver. You know, they take some kid from BYU. They just, you know, schmooze the shit out of them.
Mostly out of state reps are like the reps who get screwed over because they don't know, they're not educated.
Yeah, like they don't know what they're doing.
The kids at BYU, they meet with 40 different companies and they know like how the game works, right? But like these out of state reps, I feel so bad for because they'll get signed on at 12% commission and they have no idea.
No idea.
So
it's sucks. Horrible. But like, yeah, like, cause my experience was like, you know, I'm like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go out and sell." Literally next day, get a call from my old mission buddy. He's like, "Yeah, like, come show." Like, and I'm like, "Sweet, like, this is my guy." And then like come to find out, like, yeah, he's not
your guy.
Like, you know what I mean? You know, love my past leaders, not here to throw shade on them. It was just like that same kind of thing. It was like, you know, didn't have that track record, didn't have that stuff, and then for sure wasn't gonna like build me into who I was looking to become at the time.
A lot of recruiters, right, prey off like the naivety of reps. Like, they prey off the, "Oh, I hope this guy doesn't go meet around," or "I hope this guy doesn't know much about the space," because then they can sign them up at different deals and lower and so forth, which is really sad to us. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So as a recruiter, take that into account, everyone, like, you know, really like recruit off of your strengths, like they've been saying. So just kind of as we like finalize the podcast episode up, like, you know, what are some other like things you think sales reps need to change in the space?
Take it away, Corbin.
I think the main thing is literally just going where you're gonna have the highest rate of success. I think you just see a lot of guys that kind of like we're talking about with recruiting and stuff, just go and try and bite at the sexy things, right? Or like the commission percent or the sign on or this or that. Where ultimately it's like, dude, go where you're going to make the most money and where you're going to have the most impact on people. We're going to be able to grow the most. Look on track record. And so I think the main thing is literally just starting to care about the things that actually matter, not just the summer sales BS, like Seeger said. Mm-hmm. Just going after and looking at the things that actually matter in door to door. And then just, I think also for the whole space, it's like, dude, let's just continue to level up. Like, you just see so many guys that get in the rut of selling 200 to 400 every single summer for 5-6 years.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, go level up, like continue to get better. Even for us, it's like, dude, I want to go get better every single year for the next 4 or 5 years. Right. I just don't want to, there's no reason to settle and stay the same for multiple years on ongoing and stuff. And I think especially for the industry, it's like, dude, let's just continue to level up and go after what actually matters.
Yeah.
I've got just a way quick thing. I think one of the most slept on skills that a guy can have is the ability to copy and paste. Just like, you know, it's basically how I got through school, copy and paste. Nice. And Zach here, right?
Chegg? On
Yeah. Chegg.
God bless Chegg.
I can't even remember, dude. I just copy and pasted that too.
Yep.
But like Zach here, his nickname that I gave him a couple years ago and it stuck was copy and paste, because he would just like ask a ton of questions to the, like, not guys who were better than him, but like the best guys. Then he'd be like, cool. And then he would just go do it. Like, quit trying to reinvent the wheel. Like, there's been some pretty remarkable things happen in the space. So just go find the people who are doing the best stuff and like work with them, and then just adopt the whole copy and paste mindset, and you'll do pretty good at this.
Yeah.
I would say we all just need to be more abundant. Like, it's really cool.
So true.
Seeing like I've been at least hanging out with like Mitch Matthews a little bit more. Some other guys, like I talked to Blake Erickson at Door to Door Con. It's really cool, actually, like the space, the way it's starting to move that way.
Yeah.
It's like finally starting to, I think, after years and years and years of like not being that way. I think we all just need to be a little bit more abundant. That's my biggest piece of advice.
That's so true. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming in. This has been fire.
I think one last thing that, sorry, Roz, I totally.
All good. Note to editor, let's take out that part where I said that, and then let's go straight to Brock.
Cool. Yeah. So last thing that I've been thinking about a ton this year, this might be like the theme like of my year. This kind of goes back to like recruiters. I think what we were talking about was kind of going to the people getting recruited, like recruitees, either rookies or vets looking to find a place to go. This is like my message to people who want to build something in door to door, right? Recruiters. So I've seen a lot of like recruiters really, really care about making a ton of money themselves, which is important. So let's talk a little bit about like pay. The way that most of the industry functions in pay is a marketing deal, which is basically the leader gets a percentage. Say the leader is at a 50%, and then he pays his rep 30%. There's some expenses that can add up to 5 or 6%. So if the rep's getting 30, if there's 5 or 6% incentives, that leader who's on a 50 marketing deal or MD is ripping 15% override. Okay. So that's how the space functions. There's a couple flaws with that. You have to pay your reps like low, and you're incentivized to keep your reps low, which I think sucks. Here's like where I guess I can kind of get into this concept. I know like of plenty of people in this industry who make like way more money off recruiting with like way smaller downlines. For example, maybe a leader made like 500-600 grand and his downline did 2 million in revenue. And like, that's what he cares about a ton. And the way that that leader is making that money is by recruiting people. And then those people don't sell a lot. They sell 50, 60, 80K. And then that leader is taking just this fat rip and fat override. Okay. And like, that's what that leader cares about and is just making racks and racks and racks and racks off of people who aren't being like, in my opinion, super successful. And maybe that leader, what that leader doesn't have is then a lot of guys who plug into a system and then make a lot of money, right? A guy plugs into the system and sells 400K, 500K and makes 200 grand, right? Or becomes a golden door or builds himself. And so what I don't love is when I hear stories of a leader who made a ton of money and he had like 150 guys get out to market and they all averaged about 40K in sales. And the leader made a ton of money and most of his guys didn't make a dollar. because that leader was recruiting those guys off of this dream of, dude, come knock doors, come make great money, come change your life, come become an investor. And then what happens to that leader's downline is then nobody comes back, right? And he loses and he doesn't retain. And I see this leader every year putting up the same numbers, 3 million, 2 million, 3 million, 2 million. Like, why isn't he growing? Why isn't that the total revenue that his downline is doing? Why isn't it getting bigger? And it's because his people are leaving and yeah. he's not having an impact. And that's just not what I care about. And it's, and I think I can speak for these two. That's not what we care about. What I want to see every year is growth. I want to see the downline go from 1 million to 3 million to 5 million to 10 million. Because what does that mean? That means that people are staying. And why are they staying? It's because they're growing. They're making money. They're selling a lot. They're experiencing like personal development. They're starting to invest. And so something that like I'm so stoked about is, and me and my business partner, Wills, we have adopted this. We don't care how much money we make off of recruiting. I don't give a rip about that. What I care about is the growth of my people. And I think that's why people stay. I think that's why people grow. And I think what I love is I'm not the only guy making a lot of money. I love seeing these guys who plug in with me, like for example, Brannick Gill. Again, mm-hmm. he was our top rookie in my region. He plugged in, he sold 650K as a rookie this last year. He was one of the top rookies in the industry, obviously. Brannick just made elite money. His whole life has changed. He's now going to buy a house. He's going to invest. And what I want to do, and I think what we really believe in, is building something with an awesome group of people. And you can't go far by yourself. You've got to squad up. You've got to get with an elite group. And that's what's so cool to be a part of, is a group now who is all doing big things together, mm-hmm. building an organization, building something that's great, right? The greatest organizations in the country, in the world, in history, right? You look at ancient Rome, you look at all these things, it was built because it wasn't just the guy at the top eating. It was just this movement of people where everybody was growing and everyone was getting after it. And so something that I'm way grateful for is that we've started to now like see that yeah. where people are making great money, they're progressing, and now they're inviting others to like come in and they're able to replicate that success over and over and over and over again. I would way rather myself make way less money, but look through the whole pipeline and see everybody making 100 grand, 200 grand, 300 grand. Like that is what's special to me, is building something great, not just making a bunch of money off of bad results because I overpromised and underdelivered.
And that's the problem with the space. That's why like the space has such a bad like narrative of like, oh, don't go sell. You're going to get ripped off. You're not going to make any money. You're going to go out and lose money. Like that's why, because these leaders, right? They only care about themselves and making 500, 600, 700 grand off recruits.
Yeah.
That sucks. Right. The book that comes to mind is like The Go-Giver. Have you ever read that one?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
It's awesome. Right. Like what Brock's talking about is like the more you give, the more you're going to actually earn. It's like a really weird concept. Like the more value Brock adds and the more he gives to his people, the bigger his downline is created and the larger it will grow throughout the years. Yeah. That's what the grid is about. That's what we're all about in this room, is like the more value we can add, or the more we can give, the more trainings we can give, the bigger the program will go and do. And that's why we have such an abundant mindset at the grid of like, yeah. look, if you want to train with Brock, or if Brock's guys want to train with me, I'll happily train with them, because all ships rise with the tide.
Yeah.
And so the idea, right, is hopefully one day we have 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 golden doors. And it's like, look, we've done it. We're the biggest, we're the baddest. Come work with us. That's the idea. But it's not, totally. Oh dude, I want to make 800 grand off 150 guys and two of them come back. Like that sucks. Then you're recruiting over and over and over and over and over. So.
Yeah. 100%. It, what's crazy, guys, this is like leadership, not just one, this is advanced leadership principles here. And I think anyone could take these principles and apply it in their organizations, they'll thrive. And it just all goes back to the abundance we were talking about earlier, right?
Yeah, shout out to our leaders, right? Like they taught us all of this.
Yeah, this is not, we did not write this book. Yeah. Like once yeah. again, we just copy and paste.
Copy and paste, yeah.
From like what we've been taught.
I love that so much. Well, guys, thanks so much for coming out. Like I really do appreciate it. This has been a fire. Like I love the double golden door special. Like we've been talking about it for a while. So glad we could finally make it happen.
Dude,
so,
thanks for having us on. It's been a riot.
Absolutely. So guys, keep tuning in. More tips and tricks on how you can be a double golden door winner.
Not a single.
Not a single. You did a double. All right. We'll see you guys.
Thank you, guys.